Proverbs chapter 20, and we left off. I actually marked it down with verse 15. These proverbs are very, very practical, very lifelike, very down to earth. They won't give you any goosebumps. They won't thrill you. Won't cause you to fall out. Won't cause you to fall in. They're just plain facts of life. And I wish we had finished them before the end of the time. And we may not start with them in the fall. Is that all right with you? Well, y'all?
Yes, ma'am.
Does anyone, you have anything you'd like to explore? Well, you do plan to come back in the fall. How many of you have not been in a verse-by-verse exposition of Job? Job is really good. Would you like Job? Would y'all like to look at Job?
That'd be good.
There's more about the character of God in Job than any other book in the Bible. It really is. You'd like it again, huh? You've traveled a long way since then, huh? Covered some ground. That's good. In chapter 20 and verse 15, I brought a couple of different Bibles tonight, and the print's kind of small. Gets like that, doesn't it? But I like the way these proverbs read in here. I remember one of the things that we talked about last time was the hearing ear and the seeing eye. That was back in verse 12, but that kind of stuck with me. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. And what a tremendous gift God has given us to get knowledge and to appreciate His greatness, to see His creation, and to hear His word. You know, we take things like that for granted, don't we? Without ever stopping to think what a blessing our physical senses are to our ongoing knowledge of Him. Someone handed me a little piece of paper this morning and said, no one can graduate from Bible school until they meet the author face to face. And as we move on to know more and more, it is more a face-to-face association. Well, we'll skip then down on to verse 15. I'm going to read out of the Living Bible. These are very, very plain and I think does justice. Sometimes the Living Bible doesn't. Good sense is far more valuable than gold or precious jewels. And the New King James says, there is gold and a multitude of rubies, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. You know, the knowledge, I don't want to get too far strung off on this, but the knowledge of God is the door to abundant life. So many verses in the Bible talk about the knowledge of God. One of the finest ones is in 2 Peter, about the third or fourth verse, maybe the first, I don't remember, but early on it says, grace and peace be multiplied to you in the knowledge of God and of Jesus Christ our Savior, which is to say, peace is what everybody's looking for. And grace is the power and the strength that God has given us to do what He's called us to do. So the more we know, the more we are at peace, and the more we're able to fulfill our calling through knowledge. Brother Galen Sorey has preached such a tremendous sermon on to know God. To know God. I'd be glad to share a copy of it with y'all, and you can just mill it around if you'd like to hear it. It is an excellent message. And what he was saying, he started with talking about how advanced we are in our generation in technology. that the computer on his desk, if I remember correctly, is 1,000 times more efficient and powerful than the computer that put the men on the moon. Now, that hasn't been all that long ago. And just think now how we are increasing and making all manners of progress in technology, but how little we as a nation know God. It's really something for, and it makes me glad I'm a fanatic. It makes me glad that that's what I want in my life more than anything else, is to know Him. Aren't you glad of that? I'm confessing for you, that's my feeling. But nothing in the world that the world has can ever take the place of knowing Him. That's what this is really saying. Take the garment of one who is surety for a stranger and hold it as a pledge when it is for a seductress. And the Living Bible says, I find out my, I'll never use these fine print again, forgive me. God puts out the light of the, am I in the right verse? 16. It is risky to make loans to strangers. What he is saying is you better have some security. You better have a surety for a loan. It's risky. Risky business. Isn't that funny? You know, all of a sudden he's talking about knowing God, and then all of a sudden he just starts talking about loaning something. See, from the sublime to the ridiculous. But that's the way Proverbs are. It goes all the way just from the mundane things of life. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but after his mouth will be filled with gravel. We'd better be careful how we earn and get and come by what we think is profit and gain. It may turn sour. It may be a disadvantage to us. Some men enjoy cheating, but the cake they buy with such ill-gotten gain will turn to gravel in their mouths. I suppose you don't have any comment about any of these things. Plans are established by counsel, by wise counsel, wage war. And this is to say, don't go ahead with your plans without the advice of others. Don't go to war until they agree. Plans are established by counsel. You see, two heads are better than one in planning something. By wise counsel, wage war. Be sure that you're on the winning side. Be sure you're not alone. Be sure there's a cause that's worthy of any kind of conflict. You know, sometimes we do better if we... And the Bible tells us, blessed are the peacemakers. Paul says, as far as within you lies the ability, you be at peace with all men. Peace, Jesus said, I leave with you, not as the world knows, but my peace. And His peace is the kind of peace that we have to, the word work is not, but we have to seek after, walk in, strive after, and discipline ourselves to keep His peace. And sometimes we feel cheated, and we feel that, you know, we've been taken advantage of. And we might even get into a kind of a pity party. They mistreated me. But it's really good to be at peace, isn't it? And sometimes just to shut up will make great, great peace. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, don't associate with the one who flatters with his lips. Don't tell your secrets to a gossip unless you want them broadcast to the world. If you are very careful, and I've learned this, you'll soon find out that there are people that you don't tell anything to that's in any way confident. Any way not to be spread, and you will know them. Yeah. And it's better to keep stuff to yourself anyway. Mm-hmm. Paul said, let all your conversation be seasoned with salt. Mm-hmm. Let everything be done and said unto edification. Mm-hmm. Whatever we say that builds someone up, not a bunch of flattery and lies, but things we do to make things better are well received. Mm-hmm. My mother used to say, if you can't say something good, just shut up and don't say anything. And that's pretty good advice. We have to really watch our mouths. How many of you have noticed throughout these proverbs that our mouths are number one weapon, tool for our destruction? More character is destroyed by tongues than by weapons. I've read that and I believe it's true. Verse 20 says, whoever curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in deep darkness. And that is a figure of speech. His lamp will be put out, put out in deep darkness, means that his witness will be lost, his life will not count for anything, and he will be really cursed because of the commandments to honor our father and our mother. See, that is a very serious commandment. Boy, I tell you, children nowadays need to review that, don't they? How many of you were afraid to ever say anything back? We see nowadays, children tell parents what to do. Did you know that? And they do it. And they do it. And children tell parents what they want, and they go get it. And if they can't afford it, they put it on the credit card. But you don't dare discipline a child by telling him no about anything. I'm glad my mother doesn't have to deal with any young ones. They'd be spitting up teeth from now till kingdom come, because I mean she absolutely did not tolerate that. I would think plenty as she talked to me. If my thoughts could have been put on paper, they would have been horrible. I would have been executed. Some of you know what I mean, don't you? Tell them off. That's the truth. And I expect that some of the schools, they didn't teach us that way. And that's, there's no authority. One of the characteristics of a fallen society is the lack of respect for authority. See, we don't have as a nation, respect for the police. Mm-hmm. We don't have the respect for those in positions over us. It's just a mark of our times. And it didn't just start now. We know more about it, but all of these things were present in Bible days. An inheritance gained hastily at the beginning will not be blessed at the end. And the Living Bible says quick wealth is not a blessing in the end. You know, in a family estate, there people will cheat, they will steal, sometimes they will even murder in order to get what's not theirs. But anything we take, and I believe this is a blanket statement, you're free to disagree, but anything we take that is not ours is subject to making us miserable and uncomfortable and not prove to be a blessing to our lives. Anything that we take unjustly is likely to be a curse or a problem rather than being a blessing. Don't say, I will recompense evil. Wait for the Lord and he will save you. This is King James. I love this new King James Bible. Don't say, I will recompense evil. Wait for the Lord and he will save you. And one of the great verses that feeds into that is, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. Vengeance belongs to the Lord. I've asked this before in Proverbs, but how many of you have ever said this? I won't ask you to raise your hands, but just think on it. Have you ever said, I will get even with them if it's the last thing I ever do? Anybody besides those people that are laughing? There's something in us. There's just something built into us that wants to get even. And it's against the teaching of the Bible. The Lord will even up the scores. And what he doesn't even up, you don't need to be worried about. But isn't that just like us? I will get even with them. Or I'll show you. Your time's coming. Overcome evil with good. That's a very good point. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. How many of you know that we haven't graduated yet? We got to learn he's still working on me and saying that to make me what I ought to be. Took him just a week to make the moon and the stars, the earth and Jupiter and Mars, but he's still working on me. Isn't that good? You know what that is? That's God's long-suffering. That's God's patience. That's God's amazing grace that He doesn't give up on us. He's more anxious to bless us and help us than we ought to be blessed and helped. Don't say, I'll get even. God will take care of all of it. Verse 23, different weights are an abomination to the Lord, and dishonest scales are not good. You don't need to discuss that. Diverse weights. The scales should be honest, accurate. We used to have someone come around the country store and adjust the scales to check them. That's been many, many years ago, and I think they still do. That is a federal affair, that honest weights and scales are supposed to be in every place of business so that you get what you pay for and you don't buy the butcher's thumb. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about? You don't put the thumb on the scales. Man's steps are of the Lord, but how can a man understand his own way? Since the Lord is directing our steps, why try to understand everything that happens along the way? I want to tell you something, friends. Give up. You can never understand everything that happens. Romans 8:28 is the biggest comfort. That's the most comforting verse in the Bible. God causes all things to work together for good for those that love Him and are called according to His purpose. And He is under no obligation to stop along the way and explain to us how. We don't understand everything. There's no reason for us to try to understand everything. There's an old gospel song. Some of you old folks know it. You young ones won't. Further along, we'll know all about it. You ever hear that one? Nearly everybody has, but Joe. You ever heard that? Yes, you do. Farther along, we'll know all about it. Farther along, after a while, we'll understand. There's no use for us to wonder about it. How many of you have, I know you have, had things happen in your life and you can't make any rhyme or reason out of them? You cannot understand why it had to happen. Your daughter losing the baby, can't understand why it had to happen. Evelyn Netterville had a grandchild, new grandchild, and just as they got ready to take it home in the hospital, it died. We just don't understand. A young person dies. I remember asking my mother, this fits in here, my mother never finished high school, but she knew more about the Bible and about the ways of God than anyone else I ever knew. I remember I was maybe 9 or 10, and a young man who lived in our neighborhood got killed on a motorcycle. Now, motorcycles were scarce as hen's teeth then. But I asked her, I said, do you suppose that he was saved? And I'll never forget what she said. She said, well, if he was not saved, he never would have been. That's just something to think about. Now, we don't understand. He was probably maybe 19, 20. You've known that. Mysterious things. But somewhere, there's some reason or some plan for the family of God and those situations that affect God's people. There's something. And yeah, I'll tell you what, you'll go crazy trying to figure out life. Right? You will get in such a state of frustration that you will despair, lose hope, give up, and have a sinking experience and a pity party and everything else that would bring you down to a place of defeat. It's a snare for man to devote rashly something as holy and afterward to reconsider his vows. It's foolish and rash to make a promise to the Lord before counting the cost. Isn't that plain? You see, this is one of the things I object to, and you may not agree, but let's be friends anyway. I think that sometimes when we're called on to make pledges for this, that, and the other. We are so anxious to give. But sometimes we say things that we're not able to really fulfill. I've known of cases like that. I remember one time there was a meeting at the Holiday Inn with some itinerant person that was in. This has been 30 years ago, yeah, about. You remember? And this man was a manipulator to get money. So this lady that gave, pledged quite a sum of money, oh, she gave it. She wrote a check. And when she realized what she had given, that she could no more afford that than she could afford to buy a yacht or a hotel. And she realized that she was in real trouble. So she went to this man after the meeting and told him, she said, I cannot afford that. I just let my excitement in. He, you know, he would not give it back to her. He would not give it back to her. So we need to count the cost before we vow anything, because vows are holy to the Lord. Even this 20th century, what we say we're going to do, we need to be very careful to do it, not only to the Lord, but to one another. You see, we need to be people of integrity that will do as we've said that we will do. A wise king sifts out the wicked and brings the threshing wheel over them. Well, that sounds kind of rough, doesn't it? A wise king stamps out crime by severe punishment. Mm-hmm. I remember being one time on a bus in Thailand going from the airport to the hotel. And the driver could speak English. So he was telling us, it was about not too long after some of these uprisings. One of them was at Kent University. You remember that, any of you? When all of this civil rights and uprising started? Not too long after that. And he said that some university students had had an uprising, a rebellion against the authority of the university. I said, really? I didn't think that could happen in a country like this. And I said, well, really, what happened? He said they took them outside the city and stoned them. That's what the Old Testament Jews did. The Old Testament Jews did that for disobedience to parents. And it's true. You can check it out in the Old Testament. I mean, what's wrong with that? You say, well, that's merciless. There wouldn't be near as much crime. There was almost no crime in the Jewish community. They honored their parents. Something to think about, isn't it? Something to think about. Of all the women prisoners down there, there's one Jewish woman down there. And how many hundreds are there down there? Well, see, all those people that claim to be Christians, I mean, they know about the Lord Jesus and this, that, and the other. And some of them claim just nothing, atheist, huh? Yeah. But now, that is a remarkable one person out of all of that, of Jewish background. You know, do you realize, and I know you do, that if you are whipping your child, and that child can get to a telephone and call 911, they can come and arrest you. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. It's happening. Yeah. It surely is. See, this is another sign of our moral failure, is the lack of punishment for severe crimes. And there are more criminals outside the prisons than there are in them. Would you agree, John?
For every crime committed, every 100 crimes committed, there's one person
found guilty. 99, right, out of 100 criminals are out loose. Mm-hmm. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. Hmm? Yes, I mean, it's just in our nation. And, of course, we are the generation that is going to pay for it, but we need to just pray and seek God's face. You know, the Bible says, first of all, pray for those in positions of authority. The spirit of man is the lamp of the Lord, searching all the inner depths of the heart. A man's conscience is the Lord's searchlight, exposing his hidden motives. And that's very well said. But the spirit of a man is the lamp of the Lord. In other words, he knows us by the Spirit that is in us. And the Spirit that is in us is an open display of our disposition, our motives, our hearts, our emotions, and our purposes in life. Mercy and truth preserve the king, and loving kindness upholds his throne. That's one of the most beautiful verses in all the Bible. This is reminds me, I think it's Psalm 85, righteousness and peace. Yeah. Is it Psalm 85? I don't remember which psalm it is, but one of the psalms is so beautiful, which righteousness is the basis of the God's throne. It may not be 85. But mercy and truth. Does someone know which that is? It's not 85. But anyway, yes it is. Oh, yes it is. I get excited here. Psalm 85, verse 10. Mercy and truth have met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven. Isn't that beautiful? Mercy and truth preserve the king. And by mercy or loving kindness, he upholds his throne. And that is the mark of a godly ruler and also a description of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say anything about women, but we get gray too. The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray hair. But what it really is saying is their wisdom, their experience, their ability to handle life and to give advice or counsel with the handling of life. The glory of young men is their strength. Of old men is their experience. When you live a long time and have had lots of experiences, see, experience is a dear teacher. Mm-hmm. We learn things by experience that we cannot learn from textbooks. We learn things when we walk through them that people can't tell you about. You see, Paul said it, I've forgotten just where it is, but out of their afflictions, it was so they could comfort others in their affliction. See, when you taste, widowhood, so you never know what that's like until you pass that way. Those of you who have experienced that, if any of you have, you just never know. But we are a product of all of those experiences that we have. And of course, this builds wisdom and strength and counsel. This is why Paul wrote to Titus that the old men should counsel the young men and the old women should counsel the young women. Biblical order. Blows that hurt cleanse away evil, as do stripes the inner depths of the heart. That's verse 30. It says, punishment that hurts chases evil away from the heart. I remember when my mother used to whip me. You ever whip your kids? She'd beat on me until I cried. Because she figured when I cried, it hurt. You know what I'm talking about? And I would be so angry, but I didn't open my mouth. And then she would say, this hurts me more than it does you. And I would think, well, why in the devil don't you quit? It hurts you so badly. But if it doesn't hurt, it won't do any good. That's what this is saying. No pain, no gain. That is exactly right. Punishment that hurts chases evil from the heart. The worst thing, and I know this from teaching school, and those of you who've taught school, to threaten and do nothing is the worst crippling you can do to a child's character. Parent or teacher, police or anybody, if you're going to threaten it, you better do it. Because if you don't, they soon learn that you are a pushover and that your bark is worse than your bite. And they can push you around. And they will. And they learn it early. some Bible I was reading, I've forgotten now which one it was, says bruises. A punishment that bruises gets results. Mm-hmm. And it really does. We'll take a few verses in 21. About 10 minutes worth. Just as waters turn to irrigation ditches, so the Lord directs the king's thoughts and turns them whichever way he wants to. You know, during this time, kings had absolute authority. The monarch had all the authority in the world, they thought. But even those kings, their hearts, the Lord can do anything he wants to. How many of you know he rules over the nations? And we don't understand why we see happening what we have, what we see. But don't forget, God is in control. And nothing that's happening is beyond his change. And nothing that needs to be changed will remain unchanged. We were talking in different places about why there's so much suffering in certain places in Africa and India. It's because they don't recognize God. It's harsh to say that. But you need to acquaint yourself with Isaiah chapter 60, verse 12. The nation that does not serve thee shall surely perish. And worse to be considered is the nation that has known and apostatizes and turns away from following the light of the Lord. To whom much is given, much is required. He who knows to do and does not will be punished with many stripes. We're in serious times. There have always been perilous times. But as time goes on, there's more and more falling away, more and more unconcern, more and more entertainment in church. Are y'all aware of what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And less hardcore emphasis on character, honesty, integrity, and the character of God. We were reading in Joshua and talking about that this morning. And here's a topic that we don't even want to even think about. But God is as faithful to keep his threats as he is to fulfill his promises. Can you accept that? But we never hear of what God will do because of our disobedience. You know why we don't hear? People don't want to hear it. It's not popular. So they don't preach it because it'll make people unhappy. You see, all preaching we hear ought to make us sad, mad, or glad. If it has no effect, then it is emptiness falling on empty words, falling on empty ears. We need to always be effective when we hear something out of this Bible. Paul talked in Romans, behold the goodness and the severity of God. Brother Aaron Baxter used to say, we sing God is so good, but we don't sing God is so severe. And yet, we're told to behold his goodness and to behold his severity. It says that, and when we actually read it, it reads that in Joshua, that he is as faithful to do his threats. Y'all believe me, don't you? Don't look so... I didn't write it. I'm just telling you what it says. That this is the way God is. And Christianity is a serious decision. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Hebrews, I can't remember chapter and verse right now, but it says it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And it is. Well, we'll go just a few more verses. We can justify every deed, but God looks at our motives. Oh, my, my. Anything we do, we can justify. Come on, say amen. Don't look so sanctified. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs our hearts. see our thoughts are louder in heaven than our words are on earth. He knows every thought, purpose, and intent of the heart. We are good at justifying our foolishness, our wrong decisions. If you don't want to tithe, you can justify not tithing. If you don't want to pray, you can justify not praying. If you don't want to visit the sick, you can justify not visiting. We are full of what we think are reasons, but they're excuses. And when we've said them, we think we've justified our actions. Aren't y'all sorry you came tonight? But that's what it says. Heal your wounds. But these things are true, aren't they? What the matter? I said, all this is true. You see, if we were down at Hunt, Victoria, we could get some, John, we could get some response, couldn't we? That's right. All of they are so much fun to work with. They are hearing you.
They ain't hearing you tonight.
Oh, my. This God that we deal with, His goodness is past our even imagining. But He is also fair with His threats. To do justice and righteousness is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Boy, that'll preach, won't it? God is more pleased when we're just and fair than we are, than He is when we give Him gifts. That's the truth. Gifts don't mean anything if our hearts are not right. You cannot buy His favor. I've heard people say, oh, if this just works, I'll give so much of it to the Lord. If this just works, I remember Robert Fierro. Anybody remember Robert Fierro? One of the greatest preachers I ever heard. He said that down in Mexico, many, many, many years ago, he was down there with his wife on the mission field, and they had a sick child. He said he walked out under a tree to pray one more time for this sick child. He said, I lifted my voice and my hands and my heart and my face, and I said, oh, Lord, if You'll just heal this baby, I'll follow You every step, every way. I will do anything You want me to do and go anywhere You want me to do. An audible voice said, and what will You do if I don't heal the child? I never will forget him. You ever hear him tell that, Doctor? I never will forget him telling that. That, have you ever heard anything like that, that you never shall forget? And I want to tell you something, friends. When you hear something from a servant of God that's as honored as this man was, you will never, ever, ever be the same if you remember it. Mm-hmm. That ever happened to you? Yeah. It is a wonderful landmark of our training to hear something that you never shall forget. And what will you do if I don't? And his answer was, I'll go with you. I'll go. And the baby was healed. But it could have been that he wasn't healed. It has happened. You know, let me talk about this a minute. There was a man by the name of Jim Elliot who had an associate. I can't remember his name right now. But those men took their wives and families down into Ecuador, was it, to minister to the Aqua Indians. That's the most fascinating, fabulous mission story of our generation. It is a wonderful story. They hadn't been down there very long until they were beheaded. But you know, Jim Elliot said this, and this is another thing that changed its stage, you know. A man is not a fool to lose that which you cannot keep in order to gain that which you cannot lose. Oh, Lord, gives me goosebumps to think about it. A man is not a fool. Now think about it. To give that which you can't keep in order to gain that which you cannot lose. Isn't that good? One of the young fellows at the church was telling me today about a video on that. He said it was wonderful. He said he'd lend it to me. And I don't know, I have one. I don't know whether it's the same one or not. Wouldn't you like to see that? Would you? It's about 30 minutes. It'd be just something real nice for us to do. But that is the most remarkable missionary story of our generation. And then after the men were dead, the women stayed. And the families, and they were successful in evangelizing. And about two years ago, Elizabeth Elliott was at First Presbyterian Church, a godly woman with a tremendous testimony of mission work. That was his wife, yes. Where did I get that? God is more pleased when we're just and fair. Than when we give. You cannot give anything to him that will replace character in us. You cannot buy his favor nor bribe his recognition. You know, Psalm 51 is good in that area. The sacrifices God desires is a broken and contrite heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Psalm 51 is good. Well, let's stop there. Would someone mark that? Pride, lust, and evil, willlessness. Evil actions are all sin. How many of you know that pride is one of the worst abominations to God? We have nothing to be proud of. Jeremiah said, if any man wants to brag, he said, don't let him brag and he's got money, he's got wealth, he's got strength, but let him boast in this. That he knows me, says the Lord. Steady plotting brings prosperity. Hasty speculation brings poverty. Well, we learn that, don't we? Getting treasures by a lying tongue is the fleeting fancy of those who seek death. That's the King James. Everything in here measures our steps, friends, in daily life. It's as practical as the cleanser that we use to wash dishes with. This is just as practical, just as needful, just as applicable as soap and water. Well, let's stop there.